Welcome back to Connections. My next guest is one of the most extraordinary guitar players in the world today. Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters has said there are good guitarists, there are great guitarists, and then there is Kaki King. She's coming to the Little Theater on Thursday, February 25th. Here's just a tiny slice of what her remarkable repertoire contains. Kaki, in some ways, I don't even know how to start this conversation because our listeners who do know you will need no introduction. Our listeners who don't, well, your work can't be summed up in a sentence, which is probably why Rolling Stone said that your music is a genre unto itself. So sorry about that. To our listeners, sorry. This is kind of a hard one because, I mean, do you know what I mean, Kaki? I don't want to minimize your body of work by trying to describe it in a sentence.
I struggle. I have the same struggle. Fundamentally, I'm a guitar player and my body of work always centers around the guitar and coming up with creative ideas and ways to enhance the, yeah, it's hard. Basically, you know, I play the guitar in ways that a lot of people haven't seen, but some people have. So it's not, you know, radically new or inventive if you're in the solo guitar world, but most people aren't engaged in that world. And so a lot of what I do just looks and sounds very, very different. But, you know, I do what I can with the guitar to make it interesting, and I really try to compose in a way that is beautiful and not use technique to be the means, you know, technique is a means to an end. And I think I'll just leave it there. With this new show, I'm taking it a step further. But, you know, if we can just say guitar-centric, we can just leave it like that.
That's good. And in a moment, we're going to get to this new show, which I know the audience will want to hear all about as you're coming to the Little Theater here. But, you know, every record that you create, and by the way, do we still call it records? Is it an album?
I don't know. I think it's funny. Yeah, that's another thing. I think it was record or album, and then it was CD because that was the format for a long time. And I think record is a good one because it's a recording, so let's call it a record.
Okay, so every record you do is kind of a new exploration, at least from what I can tell. And I wonder if that is that because you're an intellectually curious person. Are you guarding against any sort of repetition or feeling like you're stuck in any sort of style? Why do you do it that way?
I think that when you choose the you know, I've done a lot of different things. I've had bands. I've done a lot of singing. I've done a lot of different things, but I've always played guitar. That's like the thing that I've always been consistent with. And I think that the guitar can sound too guitar-y, and I think over the course of doing album after album, there's something that can start to sound a little same-ish, even if the composition is fantastic and new every time. So I try to just change the sound and use different guitars and experiment with the way that I'm recording them and playing them. So I don't want to do the same thing twice, and I don't want to put an album on from 2003 or an album on from 2012 and have them go, oh, that sounds the same. Because I think that that's a struggle that a lot of solo guitarists face, is that at a low volume, it all kind of sounds the same. And I'm trying to find ways around that.
Yeah, well, watching and listening to your work, I've tried to kind of figure out how much of your ability is through practice and study and how much is simply in your DNA. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, and I don't know. Part of it is because I've played guitar my whole life, but I never studied it. I mean, I studied it when I was very young, and I mean, you know, I don't know how what you're studying when you're five. It was just kind of doing what I was told to do and putting my fingers where I was told to put them. I think it's more of a love of music more than anything. That music was the intersection, the only place in my life where I was really good at something and I really loved something. And that those two things combined in music and pretty much nothing else. And so, I don't know, it's funny, it's a nature of nurture argument as well. I have a daughter now, and she's a year and a half old, and she loves music and loves dancing more than anything. I mean, she'll dance to the bumps between segments on public radio, you know, that are 10 seconds long. I mean, so it's clearly in her, and it wasn't something that she necessarily got from me. And it's interesting because my daughter and I are not biologically related, so I can definitely kind of see where I can nurture something in her that I know she didn't get from me. And I don't know, it's fun. It's kind of fun to look at her and look at my own experience in, you know, through her and saying, well, God, you know, did I have some natural talent or did I just love it? I don't know.
I did want to at least thank you as a fellow parent, because I'm a parent of a boy who's almost four. So I want to thank you for something you recently said about parenting. I saw an interview where you mentioned that you and your wife have a daughter. I think this was a little early. I think that was still sort of in the baby stage. And so I was thinking, all right, here we go. Khaki's going to describe what parents should really do to introduce great music to their kids, right? And I'm probably going to look back and say, oh man, did I screw this up? Because when my son was born, I was torn about music. My wife and I didn't want to do just children's music, but I was also sensitive not to overwhelm with percussion and like big stentorian movements. So I took some solace in what you said about what you did with your baby in introducing songs and then even writing some simple melodies. Can you tell us a little about that?
Well, you know, and of course that's changed babies changed
sure,
quickly,
sure.
Right? So, yeah, I mean, I really wanted my daughter to be, I was like, I'm going to play her really cool, like, you know, droney synth albums, and that's going to be the soundtrack to her babyhood. And it turns out that she hated that, and she really liked Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And, you know, there was no getting around it. And so I think that I've noticed that she is drawn to melodic content a lot more than harmonic content. You know, building up interesting chords is not as cool to her as a melody that she can recognize really easily. I think recognizability and repetition are big things for kids. And so there's been that. And then there's also, at this phase, all she wants is a good beat. And she really, and it's, you know, it's great that she doesn't have to worry about, well, you know, like Kanye's beef with Meek Mill on Twitter. Like, she's got no worries about the context or the meaning or the politics or you know, who produced who. I mean, she doesn't need to worry about it. It's like, is it a good beat? And can she dance? And I love her, you know, I love what she needs in music right now. And a lot of times it's, you know, we listen to a lot of hip-hop and we listen to a lot of, she's not as interested in rock, mainly for that reason. It's a little harder for her to kind of get into. It's a little fast. But, you know, hip-hop and R&B and pop music, she just loves because it has some really interesting, important fundamentals. You know, good beat, simple melody, repetition, all of this stuff. So that's kind of what we've been listening to these days. A lot of Michael Jackson.
Very good. My guest is Khaki King, and her newest work is The Neck is a Bridge to the Body. She's performing at the Little Theater on Thursday, February 25th at 8 p.m., And so, listeners, if this is a name that's new to you, I don't want to overstate this, but I don't know if there's a better and more dynamic guitar player in the world today. And that's why...
Oh, there are. There definitely are. It's okay.
No, well, I don't know.
I mean, we do it differently, right? Everyone tries to bring their own thing to it.
I don't know. And this is one where you're not allowed to judge, Khaki. You got to let us decide.
Oh,
so,
okay. All right.
You know, when Dave Grohl and when Rolling Stone and anyway, the bottom line is your work has spoken for itself. And one of the frustrations I guess I have is that if you did decide to kind of get stuck in a genre, that maybe you would be even more of a household name, right? Because there's a lot of music that is on the radio that's three chords, and, you know, agents will tell you need a simple hook and dumb it down, and that's what sells. And that sells by the millions and billions. And your work simply has certainly moved, but, you know, does that frustrate you at all about the industry that it is this way? Because if talent were the denominator for overall sales and overall household name, then everybody would know you.
I mean, I don't know. I don't actually think that much has changed. I think that we tend to look back and think, oh, you know, Hendrix was a household name and everyone knew who he was and this stuff was on the radio. No one was playing Hendrix on the radio. I mean, like all of these things that have become icons over the years have become that way because of people who curate that and who care and who, you know, think about the past or were there when it was happening and realizing that something was important. But I think pop music's always been terrible. Really, I think, I mean, if you look at what was number ones over the years, it's always just been a lot of crap. And so I don't think that has changed much. And I don't really worry about it. I don't think I'm fine. I have a nice career. I'm very happy. I support my family. I don't need a lot more. I need to do good work. I think that's the most important thing. I think I would be very unhappy making money and not doing the work that I do or being forced into something that I'm not comfortable with. And so I feel lucky that I've been able to try different things, to make mistakes, to do weird stuff. But, you know, at the core of it, really just always be forging my own path. I don't know. I don't really have a dog in that fight, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, the newest work is called The Neck is a Bridge to the Body. And I'll admit something kind of embarrassing. I play the guitar the tiniest bit. And given how little I play, I don't even have the calluses to play without, like, crying these days. But somehow I didn't even think about the title, The Neck is a Bridge to the Body, representing the guitar, because I was thinking about human beings and how our brains and bodies interact and, you know, and how we have ideas and how we act on them. So are you disappointed in me that I didn't figure that out until I saw you?
No, I actually really like that because, you know, that the idea behind the title is to anthropomorphize the guitar. And the idea behind the show is my relationship with the guitar being one that's physical and emotional, and that together we form something greater than the two of us. And so I think you actually picked up on the right things. You looked at the human aspect. There's guitarists will think about the guitar aspect of those things because there is a bridge on the guitar. And so, no, I think you got it right.
And the show is not easily described either. I mean, if I said earlier that Kaki's entire career is not easily described, the show's not, because I don't think I've seen a visual component for a show like this really anywhere else. So to the best you can, why don't you tell our listeners what they'll experience when they come out to the Little Theater on Thursday, February 25th?
Sure. So I've got the guitar, which is now white. It is mounted on stands, so it does not move. It's actually set on stage. Well, you know, the audience will come in and see the guitar. And the reason for that is we are using a technique called projection mapping, where we're going to project images onto the white guitar. So it suddenly is this it's a projection screen. It's a canvas. And you will only see projections on the guitar itself, and there's no overlap. And that's kind of, it's important that the guitar stays in place. But I'll be playing it, and I'll be playing the soundtrack that you'll be kind of, I'll be creating the soundtrack to the movie that you're going to be seeing. And there's also a very large screen behind me that will be capturing and showing images as well. And, you know, there's a lot that happens in the show. There's a very abstract storyline where things are going from, they're increasing in complexity. And many parts of the show are actually totally performed live. I mean, meaning that I'm generating visually what you're seeing through the guitar. And so that's really exciting when I, you know, if I play a note, you see the background changes from blue to red, or you see a green spiral. Those are some of the most captivating parts of the show. And then there's parts that are just me improvising over a set piece of music or a set piece of film that is really beautiful and telling the story of the guitar and where the guitar has gone and what it's seen and how it deconstructs itself. And it's just beautiful. Like every time, even when I will come in a room and see the guitar soundtrack being all lit up, it's compelling in a way that's hard to describe. And so I think if anyone's been to any sort of big DJ concerts or dance rock stuff lately, I mean, pretty much everyone's using visuals, and this technique isn't foreign. It's just that it's not very. It's always on a large scale, the projection mapping. So sort of projecting on a gigantic set or something. And I've use this in a way that makes it more intimate and quiet on the guitar.
And what kind of guitar, again, are we talking about for this performance?
This guitar is an Ovation. I have the signature model with them, and they threw a bunch of white paint on it and looks great.
It does. It's really cool. To our listening audience, if you want to experience something that is unique is a big word, and it's not modifiable, so I can't say sort of unique, very unique. It's just unique, and it is a tremendous sort of visual and audio performance. So it's February 25th at the Little Theater. Khaki King, my guest for a few more minutes here. You know, some artists want their audience to experience certain emotions or even to understand certain overt themes in their music. Are you aiming to leave the audience with something specific, or are you content with a range of interpretation?
I love a range, and I prefer other people's interpretation more than my own. The truth is that what I have attempted to do in this show is, I think a lot of people walk out going, oh my God, that was really great. And they don't really have an idea why, or they can't say, what was your favorite part, or any of those things. But my intention was to create a beginning, a middle, and end. It's a catharsis, and emotionally the music will take you to these different places. And there's a part that's very funny. There's a sort of comic relief area. So I hope, my only goal is that people feel like they can just let out a big sigh at the end of it and go, God, that was really cool, and then process it later on in the way that they need to. That's my only intention.
Well, and when you're on stage, from what I've seen, you have been willing to be kind of vulnerable and open about your own beliefs, conflicts. You told one audience that, you know, you struggle with carbon footprints, and I know you think a lot about environmental issues, and I guess I'm impressed at this point in your career that you've resisted any overly packaged, slick presentation, sort of set speeches. You kind of just seem to open up and talk about...
Oh, I wing it every time, and it can get really awkward, let me tell you. I can start talking about my mother. Oh my God. I mean, we can go anywhere. No, I don't really have much canned. I have a couple. I like at the beginning of a tour, if a joke goes over really well, I might have to use it again.
Sure.
But no, I always make it up on the spot. It's never canned.
But when it comes to that, I mean, I was just really admiring how open I have seen you be in talking about those themes on occasion. You know, we can all say the right things about caring about the environment and the planet, but putting it into action can be harder. And I know you've thought about that. And I guess I just want to say that I find it really interesting that you don't have a set speech for that. And occasionally, if it comes out on stage, you just talk about it, not always knowing where it's going to go. And that's refreshing in an artist, because it's different.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So, okay, before I let you go then, any big themes that we should be looking for? Again, I know you said the audience is kind of free to interpret, but environment is a big thing in your life and something that you care about. Anything else that is consistently a part of your artistic creation?
I'd love for them to remember that I'm in this particular scenario, and it's a metaphor for my life. I'm very much not in control of the guitar. The guitar has its own ambition and its own intention, and I am the facilitator that helps that happen. And that is the big lesson of this show for me. And it's something that I've known all along, but have never really been able to, really express as well as I have lately in this show. So I think that's very important. And it's not just the guitar. It's kind of, you know, the instrument with a capital I in quotations that has made me a better person. And that's a big theme of this piece.
We'll see you at the Little Theater Thursday, February 25th. And you've really tolerated kind of a fanboy interview, and I appreciate it.
No, it's been great. I love it.
Thank you. We'll see you in Rochester. Cheers, Khaki.
Thanks a lot.
My thanks to producer Megan Mack, and thanks to you for listening to Connections today and every day. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a wonderful afternoon, and we will talk with you on Tuesday.